Okay, let's unpack this. You might not work directly with chemicals or anything, but pesticides, they're probably around you more than you think.
That's right.
Maybe in your food, potentially in water, or just, drift from somewhere nearby. But what does that actually mean for people? What are the human hazards involved? That's really the core of our deep dive today. We've got some source material you shared, excerpts from a text called Human Hazards from Pesticides.
A really interesting source.
Yeah, and our mission is basically to break it down, pull out the key stuff about how people get exposed, what the risks really are, and what effects these chemicals can actually have, because it can get complicated, right? But we want to help you get a clear picture.
Definitely.
And I think there's some details in here that might surprise you, some important distinctions.
Well, it's good to start right at the beginning, like the source does. Pesticides are chemicals, right? They're designed to mess with biological functions in pests. And that fundamental action is exactly how they can end up injuring people, too.
So even the ones labeled less toxic.
Exactly. The text stresses that all pesticides have potential hazards. They all need respect. And the actual harm. It depends not just on the chemical itself, its toxicity, but crucially on how much of it actually gets into your body tissues.
Okay, that makes sense. It's the dose, basically, not just the presence. So how do people typically get exposed? Like, what are the common ways this happens day to day?
Yeah, the source lays out a few key routes. The most obvious ones involve people handling them directly. So, mixing and loading the concentrated stuff, actually applying it, or even just washing the clothes you wore while doing those jobs, that can lead to exposure.
Right, but the source mentioned something that caught my eye, that some other tasks are actually riskier than the spraying itself.
That's a really critical point they make, transporting and storing pesticides.
Why those specifically?
Because you're dealing with a product when it's most concentrated. Think about it. If there's a spill or a leak before it's diluted for application, the potential for serious exposure is much, much higher.
Ah, okay. Handling the raw, undiluted chemical is the bigger danger point there.
Precisely. And accidental spills during transport or in storage, those are highlighted as sources of potentially very serious exposure.
Okay, but what about people who aren't farmers or applicators? People just living nearby?
Right, this is where the idea of off-site movement comes in, and it's super important. Pesticides don't always stay put. The text talks about drift.
Plate carried on the wind.
Exactly. Tiny particles or vapors can travel, sometimes quite a way. This can mean residues landing on a neighbor's garden veggies, potentially above legal limits, or on laundry hanging outside, kids' toys left in the yard, or even getting into houses through open windows.
Okay, that's concerning.
And then there's runoff and leaching. Rain or irrigation can wash pesticides off the target area. And where does it go? Potentially into drinking water sources, wells, streams, lakes, even underground aquifers.
So it really highlights how crucial planning is. You have to think about who and what is around the application site.
Absolutely. Careful planning is key.
And the text also mentioned that even if the pesticide stays on the target site, people can still be exposed later, right?
Yes, definitely. Like eating fruits or vegetables before the required waiting period, the pre-harvest interval is up, or even just touching the leaves or foliage of plants that were recently treated, the residue can still be there.
And there was that really tragic example about storage.
Oh, yes, that's incredibly important. Storing pesticides in old food or drink containers. The text mentions heartbreaking cases, especially involving children, who see a familiar bottle, like a soda bottle, and think it's safe to drink.
Just awful.
It really is. And that's why the source hammers home this rule. Never, ever store pesticides in anything but their original labeled container. And keep them locked up, away from kids and anyone not trained to handle them. It's non-negotiable.
Okay, let's shift focus a bit to the people who work directly with these chemicals, the applicators, the handlers.
Right. The text confirms they're the highest risk group. Makes sense, right? Close contact. Especially during mixing and loading, that's when spills and splashes of the concentrate are most likely.
And again, the transport and storage of those concentrates.
Exactly. That remains a high hazard for workers involved in those steps.
But it's not just the person doing the spraying, is it? The source mentioned others on site.
Correct. Other farm employees, maybe field workers, tractor drivers, people working on irrigation systems, they can also be exposed, either by helping transport the pesticides or, more commonly, by entering and working in areas that have been treated recently, maybe before it's truly safe.
Okay, so this is where the rules and protective measures the text talks about become really vital.
Yes, absolutely.
What kind of things does it mention?
A key one is the restricted entry interval, the REI. It's basically a legally mandated waiting time after application before workers can go back into a treated area. It's specifically there to protect agricultural workers from residues.
And what about conditions changing, like the weather?
That's another big one. The text highlights how quickly things like wind speed or direction changing or temperature shifts can increase drift potential. So applicators need to constantly monitor conditions and, crucially, make sure workers aren't nearby when applying.
And training, I assume?
Oh, absolutely. Proper employee training on risks and procedures is fundamental, according to the source.
What about people fixing the equipment, mechanics and such?
Good question. Yes, they face risks too. Residues can build up on equipment. The text specifically points out coil-soluble pesticides being tricky here because they can kind of mix in with grease and be hard to clean off completely.
So what's the solution?
Ideally, clean the equipment thoroughly before maintenance. But if that's not feasible, those workers must wear the right PPE sense, personal protective equipment, or PPE. And the text clarifies something important. People cleaning or repairing contaminated equipment are actually considered pesticide handlers and need the same specific training.
That's a key distinction. And after harvest, are there still risks?
There can be, especially with pesticides that stick around for a while, persistent ones. That's where pre-harvest intervals, or PHIs, come in. They ensure residues on the crops have dropped to safe levels before harvesting, protecting both consumers and the farm workers picking the crops.
Makes sense. Any other specific worker groups mentioned?
Yes. Greenhouse and nursery workers face unique challenges. They're often in close contact with treated plants, but in enclosed spaces. So limited ventilation can mean higher exposure to mists, vapors, or dusts.
Right. Less air circulation.
Exactly. And animal agriculture workers, too, risks from splashing liquids, say from cattle dips, or airborne dusts from treatments applied to animals or bedding, plus working in enclosed spaces like some barns or poultry houses.
Okay, so we've covered a lot about how you can come into contact, but let's get biological. How do these chemicals actually get inside our bodies?
Right, the routes of entry. The text lays out four main pathways: skin, eyes, lungs, and mouth.
Okay, let's take those one by one. Skin.
Skin, or dermal exposure. The text says this is actually the most common way people are exposed. It can cause direct effects on the skin, like a simple rash or irritation dermatitis, or even severe chemical burns.
But it can get through the skin, too.
Yes, and that's critical. Many pesticides can be absorbed through the skin, get into your bloodstream, and then travel to other organs, causing internal effects.
Does it matter what kind of pesticide it is?
It does. The chemical properties and the formulation matter. Oil-based or oil-soluble pesticides, the text notes, tend to soak through the skin more easily than water-soluble ones.
Okay.
And here's a really eye-opening detail from the source material about where on the body the exposure happens. It mentions a study with parathion. The forearm was the least absorbent area tested. Palms absorbed a bit more.
Okay.
But then areas like the scalp, face, forehead, they absorbed almost four times as much as the forearm.
Wow. Four times.
Yeah. And the genital area, it was found to be the most absorbent, soaking up nearly 12 times more than the forearm in that study.
12 times? That's incredible. It really drives home the importance of protective gear.
Absolutely. It underlines why work clothing, gloves, and importantly, washing your hands thoroughly before things like using the restroom are so crucial. And avoiding touching treated surfaces.
Okay, what about eyes?
Art exposure. Some pesticides can directly irritate or injure the eye itself. That's bad enough. But the eyes are also a way chemicals can be absorbed into the body.
So protection is key there, too.
Definitely. The text mentions specific laws, like in California, requiring protective eyewear, face shields, goggles, safety glasses for certain tasks. Mixing, loading, working on contaminated gear, most ground applications.
Got it. Next up, lungs.
Respiratory exposure. Breathing it in. This is a very dangerous route because the lungs have a huge surface area and can absorb some chemicals incredibly fast. Once in the lungs, they hit the bloodstream quickly and spread through the body. Plus, some pesticides can directly damage the lung tissue itself, sometimes permanently.
And this happens mainly during mixing or spraying?
Yes, breathing in dusts, vapors, or spray mists. That's why using the right respirator, the one specified on the product label, is absolutely critical if it's required. The text also points out requirements for workers who need respirators, like getting a medical checkup first, proper fit testing initially and yearly, and doing a quick fit check every single time before use.
Lots of safety layers there. Okay, last one, mouth.
Oral exposure, yes. The text says accidentally drinking pesticide is rare, thankfully,
unless it's stored improperly in that food or drink container again.
Exactly. That's the biggest risk for accidental ingestion, especially for kids.
Sure.
More common ways to get oral exposure are things like splashes or dust getting into your mouth during mixing or application, or eating or drinking something that got contaminated residue on it, or smoking, chewing gum, that kind of thing, while handling pesticides if you haven't washed your hands first.
And it gets absorbed easily that way.
Very easily. Through the lining of the mouth, stomach, intestines. Swallowing enough can definitely make you sick.
So prevention sounds like PPE again, washing hands.
Yes. Respirators or face shields prevent splashes. Thorough hand washing before eating, drinking, smoking is vital. Keeping food and drinks completely separate. Using original containers only. Never using kitchen utensils for pesticides. Basic stuff, but life-saving.
Okay, so even if you're trying to be careful, mistakes happen. The text talks about misapplication. Why is that such a hazard beyond just, you know, not working right?
Right. Misapplication, whether it's on purpose, by accident, or just carelessness, really amps up the danger. The text stresses avoiding errors. One type is using the wrong pesticide. Maybe you grabbed the wrong jug or got bad instructions. The danger isn't just damaging the plants or whatever you're treating. It's also exposure risk for the applicator or other workers because the PPE they're wearing might be totally wrong for the chemical they actually ended up using.
Good point. What about using the wrong amount?
Yeah, the text breaks that down. Using too little, well, it's not usually illegal, but it's wasteful, doesn't work well. And here's a really big one. The source highlights it drives pesticide resistance.
How does that work?
If pests get a dose that's too low to kill them, the survivors can pass on resistance. Over time, the pesticide stops working. And then you have to switch to different chemicals, which might be more hazardous or more expensive. It's a serious long-term problem.
Okay, and too much?
Applying too much is illegal, full stop. It damages the environment, poses direct threats to human health. It happens from bad calibration, mixing errors, misreading the label, and the result. Residues hang around longer than they should, potentially contaminating crops or damaging surfaces.
And the last type of misapplication.
Applying to the wrong site or crop. This is really serious if the place or plant isn't on the label, meaning it hasn't been tested for safety there. Or, crucially, if people are present in the area being sprayed incorrectly. Direct exposure risk.
Okay, let's pivot to the actual health effects. What kinds of harm does the source describe?
It talks about different categories of effects based partly on timing and exposure pattern. First, there are acute effects that's armed from a single one-time exposure. These usually show up pretty quickly, like within 24 hours. Symptoms vary a lot, depends on the pesticide's toxicity, the dose, how you were exposed, your own body. The label gives clues here with a signal word danger, warning, caution, and precautionary statements about acute risks.
Okay, so acute is short-term, immediate-ish. What about longer-term?
That's where chronic effects come in. These result from repeated exposure to smaller doses over a long time. Figuring these out involves long-term animal studies, often 2 years, the text says. If studies find chronic problems like organ damage or cancer risk, warnings have to be put on the label and the safety data sheet.
But it's harder to pin down than acute effects.
Much harder. And this is really important. The signal word on the label only tells you about acute toxicity. It tells you nothing about whether that pesticide might cause chronic problems down the road.
That's a critical distinction. What else?
Sensitization. This is different. It's more like developing an allergy. Think poison ivy.
Yeah.
You might not react much the first few times, but your body gradually gets sensitized. Then, after sensitized, even tiny exposures can trigger increasingly bad reactions. Rashes, headaches, dizziness. Not everyone gets sensitized, but if you do, the advice is clear. Avoid that chemical completely from then on.
Okay, like an acquired allergy, is that it?
One more category, delayed effects. These are illnesses or injuries that don't appear right away. Not within that first 24 hours. They might show up weeks, months, or even years later.
Wow, years.
Yes. It depends on the pesticide. The exposure details how much, how often, which route. The label should warn about known delayed effects and might require extra precautions. And delayed effects can happen after either a single large acute exposure or from chronic repeated exposures.
This is all quite sobering. You mentioned different levels of exposure. What kinds of symptoms does the source actually list?
Well, it makes clear that really significant exposure, either one massive dose or repeated smaller ones, can cause awful outcomes. Irreversible damage, long-term illness, disability, even death.
And for more moderate exposure?
The symptoms listed are often more general, things that could be mistaken for other illnesses sometimes, like sweating, nausea, maybe chest pains, skin irritation or swelling, feeling dizzy. A whole range.
And the timing can be tricky too, right?
Exactly. Symptoms can be immediate acute onset, or they might be delayed, showing up 24 to 48 hours later. Or they could be chronic effects that appear weeks, months, or years down the line. And those chronic ones are often tough to connect back to the pesticide exposure because so much time has passed.
Yeah, you might just think you have the flu or something else entirely.
Precisely.
Now, there is one other hazard mentioned, kind of indirectly related to pesticides, but linked to protecting yourself from them. That seemed interesting.
Yes. Heat-related illness.
It seems backwards the protective gear causes a problem.
Yeah, it can, yeah. When you're working hard in hot, humid weather, wearing PPE, especially the less breathable kinds like chemical-resistant suits, traps your body heat. Your body tries to cool down by sweating, right? But if it's really humid, the sweat doesn't evaporate well. Or if you get dehydrated, you can't produce enough sweat.
So your body just cooks?
Essentially, yes. Your core temperature starts to rise because the heat can't escape. Your heart beats faster trying to cool you. The text describes the progression. You might lose focus, get irritable, feel sick. Weirdly, you might even lose the urge to drink, even though you desperately need fluids.
That's dangerous.
Very. If it keeps going, you can faint. And if you're not cooled down quickly, it can be fatal.
And the really tricky part.
The symptoms, dizziness, nausea, confusion, headache, weakness, can look almost exactly like pesticide poisoning symptoms.
Oh, wow. That could lead to misdiagnosis in an emergency.
It absolutely could. That's why the text stresses how vital it is to give medical responders the full story. Was the person wearing PPE? What were the conditions like? Heat illness or pesticide poisoning require different immediate treatment.
So training on heat illness is usually part of pesticide safety training.
Yes. The source indicates that training on recognizing, preventing, and treating heat illness is often required right alongside the pesticide safety training.
Man, there is so much packed into the source material. We've covered all the different ways exposure can happen, even off-site drift and runoff, the specific risks for workers, especially with concentrates, the four ways chemicals get in skin, eyes, lungs, mouth, and that skin absorption detail is just wild.
It really stands out, doesn't it?
Yeah. Then misapplication, wrong chemical, wrong amount leading to resistance, applying too much being illegal, wrong place.
All significant risks.
And health effects themselves, acute, chronic, that sensitization allergy thing, delayed effects, sometimes the permanent damage or worse.
A wide range of potential outcomes.
Plus that added danger of heat illness when wearing PPE and how it can mimic poisoning. It's a lot to take in.
It really underscores the complexity. You know, pesticides are powerful tools designed to affect biology. The source makes it implicitly clear that they demand careful handling, following all the rules, and just a fundamental level of respect for what they can do.
Absolutely. And that brings us to a final thought to leave you with, drawing from this deep dive. While the source details a lot of immediate, obvious dangers, it also shines a light on these sneakier risks. The chronic effects from low doses over time, the sensitization that builds up, the delayed symptoms appearing months or years later. These things might happen long after the exposure, maybe from contact that seemed minor at the time. So the question to ponder is, how does knowing about that uncertainty, that potential for unseen or delayed consequences, shape how you think about the presence and use of these chemicals in our world? Something to consider. Thank you for sharing this source material with us, and thanks for joining us on this deep dive.